Hello and welcome to Wooden Spoons on CKUW 95.9 FM. My name is John Dick and I'm here with community nutritionist Mary Jane Eason to discuss topics of healthy living, environmental issues, what's going on in our community, as well as other interesting things in this 1 hour show. On Wooden Spoons, we recognize that all things are related, and with learning and awareness, we connect the dots and make up our world. Every Friday morning on Wooden Spoons, we speak with guests on today's relevant issues, share nutritious recipes, and explore important topics or perspectives not found in mainstream media. Time right now is 8:06 a.m. and the temperature outside is minus 28. Good morning, Mary Jane.
Oh, good morning, John. This has been quite the morning so far.
Our guest unfortunately did not show up on the Zoom call on the Google Meet, so we're gonna have to wing it this morning.
Yeah, we have to wing it this morning. Our guest, we were planning just to go over what the plans were, which went awry on all counts. The plan was we were going to be interviewing Arianna Yaftali, and she's been living in Canada for quite a number of years, and she's very involved in the community, and is from Afghanistan originally, and so we had agreed that she would be interviewed this morning, except for the very fact that when I sent the questions prepared for her, I sent them, and it turns out I didn't hear back. And so I sent her an email, and I had her phone number. And so this morning, I sent them again, and I still haven't heard back. And then, this is a morning of calamities, as I'm beginning to explain. And then I phoned her,
And a woman answered the phone, and I asked her to speak to Ariana. And she said, I'm not Ariana. And she said, she was very nice about it. She said, she's got the call from me or the email from me or whatever it was. But she said, I'm not Ariana. That's not the right number. And so basically, we're left without a guest.
Actually, she just joined.
No, well, this is... I don't know. It's been one of those
Hello.
Days. Oh, good morning, Ariana.
Good morning. Sorry, guys. I wasn't sure that am I initiating this or you guys or whatever until I saw John's email. So here I am. My apology for being late, but I was just sitting here.
Well, you know, you must have received my email and you must have received the questions.
Yes, everything is good.
Well, that's so interesting because when I called and I never heard back from you, and I called you this morning, and a woman answered, and she said, that's the wrong number. And she said I had received some calls from you before, and she said, that's not the right number.
So yeah, no, I didn't get anything, Mary Jane. I responded to your email, sorry, but I did get the questions, and... I got John's email, but sorry, I was a little bit caught up with some family matters. But
Oh, for goodness sakes. Well, I'm so discombobulated because, and then of course, I just want to go, I just have to rant a little bit. So this morning I have these spikes on my boots, you know, so you don't fall and slip on the ice. But then when you go into a building, you have to close them. You have to close them up. There's a special thing. So I had to take off my boots and sit on the bench turn the spikes inward so they're not going to affect the floor. And so then I went up the stairs and I realized I had left my cane on the bench. So then I had to go all the way down, and John is waiting here wondering where I am. Anyway, all's well that ends well, as they say. So Ariana, I'm so glad that you showed up. I don't understand why apparently another woman received the email, and but we'll leave it at that.
You definitely got somebody else, Mary Jane, on the phone.
Yeah. Well, I will confirm with you later on about the phone number and the email, because it was very strange, the whole thing. Anyways, Ariane, I'm glad you're here. And so I'm just going to introduce you. You had joined us on Wooden Spoons back in May 2006, so that's quite a long time ago. Ariana received her primary education in Kabul, the capital of Afghanistan, and later during the communist regime was forced to leave Afghanistan in 1989 and moved with her mother and sister to Pakistan. She came to Canada in 2002. It was in 2007 that we met and began classes with the Afghan women. The first group of classes were called Oven Delights, sponsored by Labor and Immigration and the Afghan Women's Organization, which Ariana founded. So that goes back quite a long time. And we're now having classes with a group from Afghanistan once again. And it's a very wonderful experience. So on that note, Ariana, welcome to Wooden Spoons.
Thanks, Mary Jane. Good morning to you, and good morning to all your listeners. It's good to be here after a long time.
Yes. Okay, so... since you left Afghanistan, you have been a pillar for the Afghan women in Canada. To provide us with historical circumstances, could you give us an idea of what life was in Afghanistan, and why you were forced to leave your country and move to Pakistan, where you lived for quite some time?
Afghanistan, as probably people know, may know, I've been in different phase of conflict and war and change of regimes and you know, persecution of Afghan people by all these various regimes in Afghanistan. My family, unfortunately, like many other million other Afghans who have been on the wrong side of politics, happened to be the target of those regimes. So my family and I, when I'm referring to my family back then, it was my mom and my three sisters. So my mom used to be a professional nurse slash midwife in Kabul. She was all her life advocating for women's rights, particularly when it came to health, reproductive health. And my sister was working with United Nations in Kabul, my elder sister, and me and my other sister, who's a year older than me, she's been participating in your classes. So we were just in a school at primary school, we had, like everybody else, my memory of my childhood back then. And from Afghanistan was a beautiful memory. So I'm still sharing with my 16-year-old daughter. We used to go to school and just a normal life a kid would have it. Of course, there's a difference between here and there. And then when the the communist revolution came in Afghanistan back in early 80s, so my mom's family and my, you know, they're all in a previous government with King Zahir Shah and our king, and we also had some family with a connection with the royal family from my mother's side. So all these things contributed that when the change of regime came, they were targeted to all the people who work with the previous government and the people who were basically ideologically, because they were communist, you know, the people were not my family, like majority of the Afghans were against their ideology and everything. And they were starting persecuting people. So some family member disappeared and lost my father. I was very, very young, so I don't recall that part of the story. So majority of my family, including my mom's uncles, cousins, and everybody, they started leaving Afghanistan because of the persecution. People were either be with them or against them, kind of a thing. So everybody left, and we were the kind of the last member of the family. And then we just left Afghanistan. We were still live under the communist regime for some time, and then just before the Taliban came out, religious group came in Afghanistan, then we left Afghanistan and we came to Pakistan.
I didn't realize that you had family in Afghanistan and that you had sisters. I was wondering about that, because you came with your mother and your sister, Humaria. And I didn't realize that you had other family members and that they're still in Afghanistan.
Yeah, so there was like, family in Afghan contacts. Even your second, third cousin, you know, they're becoming all of a sudden you're very, very close, tight bond, and, you know, probably part of the collective society. But one of my sisters, a long time ago, she left a bit earlier because her husband was jailed, and then we don't know up to now where he is. So she left earlier. She's been living in Germany for a very long time. And it was me and the sister that you met, and then there was another sister. So, and then some other extended family. But right now inside Kabul, we don't have anybody that very close time. Of course, there are some friends and distant relative, but some immigrated and lived in the north part of Afghanistan. So maybe my father's, some of family members are still there. But unfortunately, we don't have connections because we lost connection with them. So, but the closest one, they're all outside Afghanistan and North America, Europe, and here in Canada, some small member of family.
And we think of Canada as a multicultural country, but Afghanistan is also a multicultural country too. Did you want to describe the cultural mosaic of Afghanistan?
So Afghanistan, like some of the countries that I have been experienced, has got its own diversity. But in Afghanistan, we have different, like we were talking, like, you know, the women who participated in your groups, right? Yes, we are sharing that, being part of a place of birth, being from the same country, but we all have got, they are part of a different ethnic groups, language, religion, and also traditions, right? So on all these things that I'm mentioned to you, I've been impacted by the four neighboring country of Afghanistan. For example, we have in the north all the Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, that Central Asia's influence to us. And we did have women in our group that who speak Uzbek and Tajik language. And then there's a lot of influence in terms of their food and their tradition and even some of the religious perspective. And then we have languages is very diverse. So we have got the main dominant languages, Dari and Pashto. So Dari is mostly known in this part of the world as a Persian or as a Farsi. And then we have the Pashto, another dialect that has spoken widely in Afghanistan, primarily in the south and eastern part of Afghanistan. And Taliban mostly communicated with that language. And then we have got Uzbek, Turkmen language, Baluchi, Pashai, Nuristani. So this is all in different parts of Afghanistan. In terms of religion, it's predominantly Afghanistan Muslim. Mm-hmm. So majority of Sunni Muslim. And then we have got, we had in the past, when I grew up in the neighborhood that we used to live, we had a large Indian community from India. So they were all very proudly to call themselves Afghans because they were, some of them were born in Afghanistan, grew up, they had business, very strong tie with Afghanistan. And there are still the majority left, but maybe the small pocket are still there. And then we had the Sikh community there as well, which is Afghan Sikh. And
the
then
Sikhs?
A small pocket. Yeah, the Sikhs, yeah, they are from India, but this the Indian, Sikh Indian. And then we also had the Jewish community, a small pocket of the Jewish. And don't forget that Afghanistan, pre-Islam, they were Buddhists, right? And they were, the Buddhism was widely practiced in Afghanistan. And maybe still, but I doubt it. But because even if, we are small. I've got now there's some Christian communities there as well, the Afghan Christian. But unfortunately, due to fear of persecution and they don't want to get exposed to Taliban because exposure means that you have to face death penalty or who knows what they do. And then we have got the food, as witness of the Afghan food, the new Mary Jane you have been seeing and experiencing and tasting the Afghan food. Women, people in the north part, they have got different cuisines, south, east, west. So there's a lot of influence of those countries like Iran, we have then China and Pakistan, and then we have got the Central Asia on the other side. So these neighbors have done a lot of influence and have left some influence in Afghanistan. And then in the north, I must admit, this is where my gender, my family, we've got some root with the Greek tradition, because back then when the Alexander the Great invaded that part of the world, so there's been a lot of Greek influence in north part of Afghanistan. Actually, there's a Greek town there.
Mm-hmm. I was looking at the map. I had not a very good map, but I could see that Afghanistan is sort of, there's borders on Iran and borders on Pakistan. So I can see how, there's a lot of, cultural crossovers there. You're listening to Wooden Spoons, CKOW 95.9 FM, And our guest this morning is Arianna Yavtali, and John is our co-host. Did you want to ask any questions, John?
I didn't have any questions for this one, no.
Okay. I know, there were reasons why you left. You and your mother left. You and your sister and mother left Pakistan. But maybe before you left your country, you were highly educated. And will you tell us about your credentials and the work that you did there? And why did you leave Pakistan with your mother and sister?
Education, yes, this is something that I'm always talking with my daughter here, 16 years old. I say that you have a lot of opportunities here. You've got many options. You have got the world is like the opportunity is wide, like an open sky. So take advantage of that. Of course, sometimes doesn't make sense. She's a teenager. But my mom's family, fortunately, that they were educated and they had an opportunity to go to school, the university, and education was the main pillar of, in addition to other stuff, but the main pillar of our families, and particularly the girls' education. So the boys, naturally they get that opportunity. Afghanistan still, even back then when I was there, girls was and women was treated the secondary citizens. So, and it's a patriarchy society. So, right now all the rights and everything was taken away. But previously, so if there's any choice between girls and boy, the boy get all the opportunities and everything that's available to the family. But in my family, because we were all girls and maybe because of my mom, she definitely wanted all of us, the four girls, to be educated. I did my education, two of them finished high school, but me and my young, the other one, Omaira, we didn't get a chance to finish our school. We were in a primary school. Then when we left, grade 7 or 6 and 7 when we left. And then we came to Pakistan. And in Pakistan, as you know, we were a refugee. So that means by the just virtue of being a refugee, you have very limited rights. So the matter of fact that you've been given a place to live in a peaceful place and no war and some access to certain things, some basic rights as a refugee. But other than that, going to school and stuff, there were certain criteria you had to apply certain things. But we were just fortunate. We left because I had some family members earlier in Pakistan before we came. So they kind of are guiding us through the process. And then there were a lot of international aids in Pakistan back then. I'm talking about late 80s, early 90s, mm-hmm. In Pakistan, because the war was still going on in Afghanistan with the Russians, and the West had a huge interest, including United States, to push the Russians, out of Afghanistan and fight them. And at the same time, Pakistan and Iran, that was the place, majority of Afghans, over 5 or 10 million Afghans were divided between these countries. Some were stayed in the refugee camps, which was far away from the city. But I still think my family was fortunate that we didn't have that experience living in a camp. We left, we brought some money with us from Afghanistan, and then we managed to kind of get connected there. And my mother was still continuing work, and my other sister was working in the UN. So we had some sort of an income to support ourselves. And then I was managed to get to one of the school there. And then we also continued learning English classes, which was through some of them was funded by Canada or United States or other countries, allowing the young girls and boys who escape Afghanistan and their education have been interrupted, so to be part of those schooling. So that's how I did my schooling there, completed, and then went to a university, not a the Pakistani university, because again, we priority was given to the Pakistani people. We were again the second, we were refugees there still. But I managed to go to private school, I mean, university there, and get my bachelor degree and master degree there. And then at the same time, because there were so many foreign NGOs and United Nations were for Afghanistan program, we were in Pakistan. So I was fortunate enough to get hired, and one of them I started working. And then the circumstances why we stayed close to 10 years there. It was never like we were not giving any citizenship. You know, again, we had freedom of movement, freedom of, you know, being walking around and stuff without being targeted. But there was no, we could have lived there for a long time, but we had no citizenship. We were not a Pakistani citizen or even a permanent residence, because we were just giving a place to come and stay. And then back then, a majority during that time, the holy war in Afghanistan, that's what they called it back then. They were fighting the freedom fighters, which they would call it Mujahideen. They were fighting the Russians. So then all the Western country was supporting them in their fight against the Russians. And all these European countries, America and Canada came in the picture a little bit later to accept the Afghan refugees. So they were on an annual basis, the people will apply through United Nations or just on their own, and then they would get go through the interview process to ensure that who you are when you left, what's your story, is there any way to go back, or can you settle in the current country that you're staying. They're looking at all those criteria, and then we didn't fit in those ones because we were women at risk and no male with us going back. Then by the time we were thinking of going, then September 11 happened, so Taliban went back to Afghanistan, so like Afghanistan became again the topic of the media and everything. So that produced another wave of refugees in from Afghanistan to Pakistan, Iran. And then at that time, Canada opened their doors, and then we applied through on our own, and then or United Nations. I 100% not sure how that process work, but regardless of that, we went through the process, interview and medical checkup and security, and then we landed here.
It's a very complex situation, and it's just very amazing that Afghanistan is the center of all these huge powers getting involved, like the Russians and maybe China possibly, and then Canada and United States entered the war with to fight the Taliban. That's what we understood, and maybe the Taliban, they came into power. Maybe you could just tell us what they stood for and what they are about, and then how did the Taliban come into power in Afghanistan?
Well, it's a sad story, like all the other stories of the war. So back then, you know, there's a debate here that who are the Taliban, but in a nutshell, they are the Islamist militant groups. So they were supported, you know, maybe some of them, they were supported back then when the Russians were in Afghanistan by the United Nations and other Western countries to fight the Russians, right? So some of them, like from that war, it's kind of over 40 years now. So some probably, you know, passed away or disappeared, but the generation, you know, the family, the intergeneration, they're all involved in Afghan war. So some of them are extension of those people, you know, some, but others, you know, like not in, based on the research I have done and what we know, not all of them are Afghans. They came from various countries that they were at the time supplying fighters to Afghanistan to fight the Russians. So and there's an influence of also of Pakistan. So some of them could be Pakistanis, or some came from some other countries in the Middle East, or maybe Yemen, or some countries like that. But they have ruled, they were in Afghanistan back in 1996. Remember, then Russian left, then the Islamic, then United States left Afghanistan because they said Afghanistan is now, our interest is over, Russian left, so now it's for the Afghans to decide their fate. But unfortunately, there's a vacuum of power. Still, the country who went in a war for 10 years, there's a brain drain, there's a lack of proper infrastructure and all these things. And all of a sudden, asked them to run the country was like not very smart idea, because when there's a vacuum, then this is where the Taliban came and said, hey, we are the alternative here. And Afghans back then were so exhausted, like, you know, in any other country when there's a war and conflict and persecution of human rights, so you look for a alternative. What's there? So they came and they promised security for the Afghans, because when the Russians left and US and all the allies left Afghanistan, at that time, the group that they were actually supported by them, they went inside the big city. So, you know, who knows what happened, but when there's a chaos, everybody takes advantage. So Afghan women and their families, and they got disappeared, raped. There was a huge problem back then, not in terms of how to run the government, but families, you know, people, ordinary Afghans were targeted again. There was lootings because there was no structure, no power, nothing there to, there was no law and order, right? So they came as an alternative, and people didn't know who they were. They introduced themselves as a third options, and because they provided that security and there was guaranteed people still could get, you know, there was no looting and or raping of women and all those things. So people kind of welcomed them back in 1996 to, they introduced their Sharia law and various religious policies that that they were issuing, that you can do this. And then people started thinking that, oh, this is basically, they're giving us security, but all our rights, and women were not allowed to get out, and women, actually, they started persecuting women. If you're not wearing burqas, if you're not wearing this, and you're not walking with a male member of the family who's very immediate member, you can't walk with any male on the street. So yeah, it has to be your brother and or father or uncle. And some Afghan women back then, they lost all their family members. Like, if I had been living under the Taliban, I would have been, you know, my family, my mom, my sister, we would have been slaughtered by them because we didn't have a male to accompany us. And my mother was the one who was supporting us. She was the breadwinner, so she couldn't go out. So this would have had a huge impact on our mental, physical, everything, you know, health. And in addition to that, we have no income or anything. So majority of Afghans were in that. And then back then, so there was a period was calm there. And then in 2001, then again, because the September 11 happened, unfortunately, the Twin Towers and whatever happened in the United States, then they realized that, oh, who did it? So that back then, the leader was Osama bin Laden. He was the kind of their religious leader he was the main guy. And then the U.S. went, and he was residing in Afghanistan back then with all his people and followers, and he was a rich guy. And then the U.S. went after him, and then they found him, they killed him, but then at the same time they wanted to pay attention back in Afghanistan to, they realized that Afghanistan became basically a terrorist, a place where the terrorists can do all the activities, suicide bombing, and then the problem penetrated in the West. And when the Afghan told, when we told the U.S. government and the international community that these are not Afghans, these are destroying our country, they are women's rights, children's rights, human rights, the abuse of human rights in Afghanistan was is was shocking, but the world didn't realize back then until the sad event happened, unfortunately, and then they went back. So when they captured Osama, they killed Osama, and then they bombed certain area of Afghanistan, they could do that because they have got that capability, right? And then they brought the Afghan president as an interim back in 2001. This is the time my family, we all left because we knew that this is not going to be, Afghanistan still is a long way to go back, you know, and come in a sort of a stabilized country in Central Asia. And then the Taliban disappeared, they get rid of them, but, you know, they get rid of them. Yeah, they went back to Pakistan, majority of them, but they started fighting, you know, for 20 years or close to 20 years up to, I think, 2000, probably 10 years ago, maybe, or 8 years ago when they were there. There was, everything was kind of a normal, still people, normal in that context, not normal like our life here. And then in 2000, when the Canadian troops left and then American, everybody left, and then the Taliban went back. You know, we had a sort of a kind of, there was a couple of election there. Yeah, I know it wasn't a fair and transparent election, but at least, you know, the two presidents came after the Taliban, and they were all educated and supported by the United States. So they were there. And then once the international community left, it was very hard for, that was just before COVID hit, and that to control Afghanistan. And then Taliban went back there in August 2021. They went back and then they started occupying. I don't know how they did it, but obviously they dismantled the Afghan army, and somehow they went, and in no time they took over Afghanistan. So then there's another wave of Afghan refugees came. So overall, they don't believe in human rights. They don't believe in women's rights. Their court, their rule of law is basically judged based on their personal interpretation of Sharia law. Mm-hmm. A lot of them is into very inconsistent and harsh sort of a ruling for the Afghans. There's impunities, girls and even boys. It's not just girls and that been their rights have been taken away. There's no right for education, employment, public participation, freedom of movement. There's a huge gender persecution in Afghanistan, and the civil society, they can't speak. There's no freedom of speech there. And media is very limited to what they can portray in the media. Digital information and rights have been taken away, so there's very limited rights that they can use their phones and stuff. And the right of minority people, you know, the people who are in a central part of Afghanistan, and if you're not part of their religious tenets, then obviously you are not one of them. So like people, Shia group, Azaras, people in the north were, so because primarily they came from the south part of Afghanistan, some of them, and then from Pakistan. So they don't understand the majority of Afghans. And then there's, of course, humanitarian crisis. I am in constant contact with families, like the women in our group, excuse me, who have got families and friends still in Afghanistan. They are telling us, and there's some of them, if they are all women in the family, there's no male member, they can imagine how they can support themselves. There's a crisis there. And international community, because there's not a lot of diplomacy and relationship, there's no recognition of the Taliban movement in Afghanistan, so therefore there's a very limited tie. There might be a few United Nations organization operating inside Afghanistan because they can't do anything with them under the international law, and there might be some aid diplomacy going on here and there, but in general, United Nations and all international community condemning their repeated systematic abuse, and I've been urging them to respect the human rights and women's rights. But the Taliban is still, now it's been over 6 years. This is the same thing. They are not. They still haven't left their harsh practices and working with the Afghans. So this is a lot of sad time for people of Afghanistan who are still there. And then some of the people that recently we have in our groups, the recent cooking classes that we have. So with exception of one or two, majority of them came in the last 1, 2, 3 years. And some of the stories that they have been sharing with me, it's heartbreaking. It's very sad, but yet you still see these people get up in the morning here in Canada, and then they're doing the right things. They're participating, in their Canadian societies. They're trying to learn the language, send their kids to school, join and come the classes to learn about life in Canada, and we are supporting each other. And they're doing the right things, but it's very sad thing that the people who are supposed to run the country, they are not doing the right things.
Yes. Well, I'm very impressed with the Afghan women and their resourcefulness, and they have such a wonderful spirit. And I know that in the countries such as Iran, even there was an uprising in Iran, and among the protesters were women who threw their veils in the fire that had been lit. And there was a brutal attack against the protesters, and many were killed. And one of the women in our class from Afghanistan, she had a close relative who was in Iran in that recent uprising. And so this is a very volatile area with very entrenched and intolerant views and world views about how people should behave, and their religion hasn't really evolved to with the times. Anyway, there's so many different things that we can talk about.
Yes, the women. Yes, unfortunately, Mary Jane, yes, and there's some of these women have got strong ties even with Iran. I mean, even like I don't have any Iranian, I've never lived there, but I have got close friends and I have got very close, like my family member. So when they are impacted, right, we are all impacted. And and some of the women who come to our classes, they do have people in Iran. And they're unfortunately, because Iran in the past, there was not a lot of diplomatic tie between Iran, Canada, and the United States. There's no embassy operating right now from these countries. So they've got still their families who have got their visas to come to Canada, but unfortunately they are still living in Iran and they have no way to leave Iran. So this is another problem that the Afghans facing. But yes, I was so proud of those Iranian women and girls that they were standing, taking their scarf and burning it, because that's not something that, this is not human rights, not about a piece of scarf. I mean, if people wear a scarf, I 100% respect them. That is their wish. But when you're forcing those things on people unnecessarily, it's not about scarf, it's taking all their rights. So there's a lot of similarity there. And I hope that the Iranian people will fight back and get their freedom soon.
And you're listening to CKOW 95.9 FM on Wooden Spoons. And we are talking to Ariane Yaftali, a woman that came from Afghanistan, has been in Canada for many years, and has many qualifications. Maybe, Ariana, we have to close. We're getting running out of time here. But we might have to talk again, because there are so many different aspects to the women whose protocols have to do with fasting and things like that. There's a lot of similarities.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely,
Mary.
Yes,
we are here, and we can continue our conversation.
Yes,
I appreciate the time, and giving me an opportunity to sort of scratch the surface. But yes, sure, we can always come back and talk.
Yeah, for sure. And we'd like to talk about your cuisine, yes, too. Excellent cuisine. And I think, Arianna, yes, you have a song that you had suggested. John, did you have a song?
I have sent a link to John. Did you get it, John?
Yeah, I did. I'm just pulling it up right now.
We'll be interesting. Interesting.
That's a very uplifting song, and a very famous singer who has been fighting through his songs for human rights in Afghanistan, and he's been very vocal about the situation. And he's one of my favorite Afghan. I've been biased as well, but it's very upbeat. There's a lot of instrument that Afghan people like, the tabla, the drum, and there's another instrument that they're playing, so similar to guitar. So they're all kind of a mishmash in this song, so I thought it's perfect for Friday morning. And I also, Mary Jane, wanted to, if I have 1 minute, to tell your listeners that we have the Afghan cookbook that we have, yes, did a lot of work with, help, yes, of Mary Jane's cooking school and Mary Jane's, mm-hmm, leadership. So we have those copies if your listeners always want to get it. It's about the Afghan culture, food, some remedies, and just the experience of all Afghan women in Winnipeg for the last 20 years. We all tied it together in that beautiful book. So if people want to buy it, the money, we keep it in our bank account for refugee sponsorship or other activities of women. So the cost of the book, $20. You can always get it through Mary Jane's Cooking School as well.
Thank you for so much, Arianna, for mentioning that. It's a very excellent book, and a lot of work went into it. I think now we have a song that we're getting from Arianna's suggestion. Are we?
Yes, this is Dania Guzaran. I don't know who it's by or if that's the name of the song or the artist, but I'll play it anyway.
That's the name of the song, and the name of the artist is Farhad Daria.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Right, yeah, there it is.
Yeah, I think there's a picture there as well, but you said it very well, John. Well done.
Thanks.
La 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 la. من نغمه سرای دل عاشق پسران، دنیا گذران، دنیا گذران، کار دنیا گذران، دنیا گذران، کار دنیا گذران.
خوش پیر شوی ای یار جوان، خوش پیر شوی ای یار جوان.
من نغمه سرای دل عاشق پسران، من نغمه سرای دل عاشق پسران. عمر جوان می گذرد، گل می
می گذرد موسم گل می گذرد ماششتا و کاروان ز پل می گذرد یم سال گذرد سال دیگر باز آید تا سال دیگر عمر جوان می گذرد تا سال دیگر عمر جوان می گذرد دنیا گذران و کار دنیا گذران دنیا گذران و کار دنیا گذران
خوش پیر شوی هی یار جوان خوش پیر شوی هی یار جوان
من نغمه سرای دل عاشق پسران من نغمه سرای دل عاشق پسران
That was that's a very vibrant song. It was all
yeah, it is
lovely. We're running out of time, and I'd like to make a few announcements and a reminder that a fun drive is coming up from February the 6th to the 20th, and this is the time when we're raising money for the station. So we're going to be making pitches and trying to get people to donate to the station because this is commercial free station, and this is how we don't have any. Commercial sponsorship as most stations have. So that's just a reminder. And also Marianne Sorelli and Kale in Spain, they will be having their program after us. I'm not sure if there's another week. Maybe they won't because of a fun drive. But their program is called Dialogues, Gravel Roads and City Lights with Marianne Sorelli and Kale in Spain. I also want to make an acknowledgement, which I didn't do this morning because things were very peculiar. Apparently, the person that I called this morning said that wasn't the right person, so I thought I had the wrong phone number. But apparently, Ariana was on, so everything turned out right. And on Wooden Spoons, we acknowledge that we are located on Treaty 1 territory, the traditional land and water of the Cree, Ojibwe, Cree, Dakota, and Dene people, as well as the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis homeland. We also acknowledge Shoal Lake Number 40, First Nation for its territory, and our life-giving water. I want to just mention something. I don't have too much time to cover the nutrition part, but this does refer to nutrition. And I want to make a commentary on Senator Robert Kennedy Jr., who is in the Trump administration. And one of the things that he has been doing, which I appreciate that he's doing, is that does not want genetically modified organisms to be considered safe. He wants the data. He wants the research. Now, Monsanto, which now is sold to Bayer, has taken over many of the crops, has forced people to not make any, they cannot save the seeds, and they have glyphosate in the plants, which is a toxin, and the glyphosate kills insects as well. And so apparently there have been studies that glyphosate is cancer-causing. And it's found in all the grains that are grown, except for organically grown grains. So he is proposing that genetically modified foods have to be regulated. And so he's fighting for that. The reason he's with the Trump administration is that the Democratic Party would not accept him because they did not believe in his ideas. The Democratic Party is not exactly very enlightened, I would say. So Robert F. Kennedy is really a very ethical man as far as I'm concerned. And one of the things that he is also promoting is vaccine safety. Now, the National Citizens Inquiry came across Canada when the vaccine was being given and forced, pretty much foisted on people. But they were looking at adverse effects that occurred. John Kennedy Jr. is not against vaccinations. The media, the free press, has made statements. Teresa Tam, who is involved with the health department, has accused John F. Kennedy as being anti-vaccine. John F. Kennedy is not anti-vaccine. I have been listening to programs that he was offering on air when my brother was still alive, and he is not anti-vaccine. But he takes note of adverse effects which have happened, and there has been research that has shown that there was a lot of interference by Pfizer. They had actually, well, this is another whole issue that was discovered. There were certain sets of the vaccine that were made to harm. They were doing experimentation under the authority of Fauci in the United States, who certainly quickly resigned after when there was any controversy that arose. So just wanting to say that John F. Kennedy is not against vaccines, and he's also wanting to have he wants to see the data now on glyphosate being used. There is a lot of material about it that it is harmful. He wants to see the research. It's finally time for that to happen. Thank you for listening to Wind Spoons, and thank you, John, for joining us, and thank you, Arianna, for being our guest this morning.
Yeah, for sure. You've been listening to Wooden Spoon, sponsored by Mary Jane's Cooking School on CKUW 95.9 FM. For our podcast, please go to ckuw.ca, type Wooden Spoons in the search bar, and the show will be up in just a few hours. Till next time, this is John Dick and Mary Jane Eason saying bye for now, and thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!